Hello, folks, and welcome to the April 24th edition of Dead Pit Radio. I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
Hello, I'm Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill just got done sticking stuff up his butt.
Oh,
no, no,
no. No, no.
Pickle jar.
It broke in my butt.
Pickle jar broke tonight. He actually broke Uncle Bill's butt this week.
That would be a good one to use, like, whenever I'm not around for the college. Oh, pickle jar broke in my butt.
Well, he's currently having shards of glass picked out of his anus. So, in addition to pickles.
Yeah, that would be the most degrading part of that, is having to pick the pickles out of your butt.
Okay, now, this is, when shit like that happens, is when homosexuals start getting a bad reputation.
When that happens?
Yeah.
I don't know about all that, but I just am curious as to why you would pick out of all the shit you could possibly pick a pickle jar. Like, you would hope, if you're going to sit down on something, you'd hope you pick plastic products.
Seriously. Why can't they just be like Uncle Bill over here and stick baseball bats up their butt?
Now, that would splinter, too. You don't want to stick that up your butt.
No, you use those aluminum baseball bats.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, those Eastons.
Oh, Lord God. Be like you and stick Sprite bottles up your butt. Oh! Oh!
Women should stick stuff up their butt, though. Not men.
I don't think anybody should stick anything up their butts, to be honest.
I've actually heard stories that certain women that enjoy the anal foreplay goodness, that they actually go around all day with butt plugs in their ass. It, like, sort of gets them off or something. Like, they stick the butt plugs in the office, and they just sit there all day.
That's not a place to warm towels and stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I would think, too, that I don't know if that would help or hurt the bowel movements. What do you think?
I think it can only serve to help. Because you're expanding.
That's true.
But then again, it pushes the shit back up in
there. Yeah, it's sort of like a cork or something.
Like liquid cork.
No.
I don't know.
See, all this started from anal bleach. Because before, you know, assholes didn't, it was like no man's land, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all these porn stars now, they wax their ass. They get all that hair out of there. And they get rid of the brown eye.
But if you ever seen like 70s porn and stuff, I mean, you could plant fucking tomatoes in that, their asshole. They're so nasty.
That's true. Yeah, it looks like one of those deals where, you know, you could plant cucumbers or, you know, green beans or something.
That old dirt box coming.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, it's a good thing though that we don't have a guest on the show this week, because if we did, and they was to hear this, they would be totally offended.
I doubt it, unless they bleach your asshole or have a dirt box.
That's true. Yeah, that's a thing. I mean, you can make fun of women that bleach their asshole, but they want their ass to look nice.
Yeah, what's the alternative, really, going around having a nasty-looking Cadbury egg?
Have ring around the ass. Nobody wants that, the little brown ring around the ass.
So, anyway. It's like 5 minutes of talking about asshole.
I think that we've gotten in trouble. I think people that listen to this at work have probably, we've gotten them in trouble, Uncle Bill, and I'm sorry.
We apologize.
But odds are, if you have a woman and she's your boss, she probably bleaches her asshole because she can afford it.
In summary, don't stick anything glass up your ass and bleach your asshole.
And bleach your asshole.
It's good for the men folk.
Your husband, your boyfriends will appreciate it. But you gotta wax first. You gotta get rid of all that old hair and stuff and make it look like a fucking flower pot.
That's right. You don't want your asshole looking like Hulk Hogan's head after it's bleached.
I think the only way that would happen is if you had the orange spray tan shit and you just put that on it.
My asshole looks too white.
And it needs a tan. I'm sorry, folks. I really am. I didn't mean to gross you all out, but, you know, That's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah. So anyway,
the show this week, we are talking about horror films, and of course assholes too.
Somewhere we're going to talk about a horror film, and I know that for a fact because this show is all about sequelitis, which is a rare yet terminal condition that happens when a film produces way too many sequels and they start to jump the shark progressively one more after the other.
When horror franchises go one step too far.
Ooh, I'm scared.
That's sequelitis. Yeah. Doodle a fucking do.
So, what films are we going to be doing on the sequelitis show, sir?
Well, one that I picked in particular that has always held a special place in my heart ever since I bought it in the Walmart 588 bin. This was back when the movies were 588. Probably a good 7 or 8 years ago. I saw this movie and I loved every minute of the cheesy horror goodness that goes on in this. This is the fourth Amityville film, Amityville, The Evil Escapes.
Babadook.
Also, the series that probably already took it one step too far with part two, but yet went on with part three, starring Bill Moseley. We're also going to be talking about Silent Night, Deadly Night 3. You better watch out.
That's the sequelitis portion. And in the review portion this week, oh my God, we have some doozies for you. I know that we have the latest from Toe Tag Pictures and Fred Vogel. It is The Murder Collection, Volume 1.
And from director Jimmy Houston, who's the same asshole that directed Final Exam, by the way.
That is right, yes.
We've got 1986's My Best Friend's a Vampire.
And packing vampires.
Robert Sean Leonard.
Yeah. We need to make a movie called The Flea Market Vampire. Spell it vampire.
Vampires!
I think that'd be interesting. But we do have the horror news, and we have fan questions to get to. The fan call-in portion will return next week with me and Uncle Bill, and, it'll just be an old-school show this week with no fan interaction aside from the fan questions.
Yay!
And special shout-out goes out to all the motherfuckers that think that we're retarded hillbillies.
Now, why would anybody think that? This show is very prestigious, high class.
It is. I mean, here's the thing about Dead Pit Radio that people don't understand, okay? Stars in the horror community, it's sort of like they know that they've made it if they are invited to come on Dead Pit Radio. I mean, you know, I've heard it from a lot of filmmakers that we've had on the show that they know that they've really hit their stride if they're a featured guest on Dead Pit Radio. Isn't that right, Uncle Bill?
Yeah, I mean, I hear that all the time from a lot of different people. I'm just hoping that we can pass on, you know, some of the gold that we have right now onto another young aspiring filmmaker or actor, you know, so that their career can really get, you know, what I like to call the Dead Pit push.
This is true.
So if we back somebody, I mean, they're going all the way.
Yeah. It's like Patrick Ray. I mean, look, before, I know that none of you guys knew who Patrick Ray was until we talked about him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And now all the horror websites are covering,
mm-hmm.
you know, the prodigy of indie short horror. And he's going to be at the Fright Night Film Fest again. And he's going to be rocking and rolling, strutting and strolling, every horror convention known to man, spreading the good word. And, you know, there's tons of other people we talk about that was the same way. And what we try to do here at Dead Pit is entertain the fans and provide a quality show. But we also intend on dedicating the fans out there to all the talented individuals making horror films, not just mainstream films. And we try to let everyone know about the overrated douchebags that are making mainstream films that absolutely don't deserve it and never deserved it. And I think you know who those guys are.
So here's what I want to know, though. Who was it that was saying that we're silly?
Oh, there's a lot of people, Uncle Bill. A lot of people don't know of the majesty that is Dead Pit Radio.
Here's the thing, though. I didn't go to school for 8 years and master in horror and get my PhD and write my dissertation on horology just to have assholes like that call me silly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, people don't really understand that we are board-certified horologists, okay? And nobody else in the horror radio realm can claim that because they simply are not, okay? Michael Slipcase Felcher received an honorary degree in horology, but, you know, even he didn't get board-certified in the world of horology. He didn't. I mean, he knows a lot. Certain things he probably knows more of than we do. But he didn't take the time to go to school, to learn this stuff, to, you know, major in, you know, broadcasting of horror. And, you know, he just didn't. You know, nobody else did either. Feedback didn't. He's on Roomorg Radio.
Not at all.
We appreciate those guys. I think those guys put on a top-notch horror show. It's not a horror talk radio show. We're the innovators of horror talk radio. But he's not a, he doesn't have a degree in horology, okay? If anybody else out there thinks that they can step up to the plate, you're more than welcome, okay? But you will get owned by Dead Pit, okay?
And
Make no mistake about it.
From what I understand, if I'm hearing this correctly, a lot of people like feedback don't even have their masters in horror communication. And that's just sad because we really are trying to uphold something here. We're trying to uphold a standard of practice that a lot of other sites aren't. And it just makes me sad when I find out that a lot of these people aren't certified and are practicing this without a license.
Yeah, and they're actually doing radio broadcasts and they don't have a license in horror broadcast journalism. They don't. But we do, okay? And, you know, and people take shots at us because we're from Eastern Kentucky and we have the accents we do. But look at it like this. You go on any other radio, and I say this in quotations, horror radio show, they just don't have the certifications that we do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. So they can all go to hell.
You say what you will.
You kiss my ass.
All right. We're
I don't know what are we... What the fuck are we doing anyway?
I don't know.
Well, we're a good fucking...
It's pretty fun, though, whatever we're doing.
We're good 13 minutes in on the show.
We haven't done one single
thing. We haven't even talked about the news. That's how good we are at bullshitting. But let's get into the horror news this week. First up, Halloween 2, or better known as H2 from Dimension Films. They announced that Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 trailer will premiere on YouTube tonight for an exclusive one-week engagement. And Dimension Films also have the film slated for a release on October 28th, 2009.
I like that one-week engagement, like a trailer, some big fucking deal. Oh, we're only going to put this out for a week.
Yeah. We do have a special one-week engagement of me kissing my own cock on YouTube right now as well.
That's true. That's an interesting video. Everybody should check that out if you ever want to see anybody kiss their own cock.
I tried to get Uncle Bill to kiss my cock, but he wouldn't do it.
Why not? I was too busy fiddling around with my own cock. Worry about yours. But
Would you shut the fuck up?
So guess what? Joining the ranks of many prestigious film companies like BCI, 20th Century Fox has apparently closed down Fox Atomic.
Well, I'll be.
Now, Fox Atomic, as you might remember, was responsible for releasing such gems as 28 Weeks Later, Turista, and The Hills Have Eyes remake. They're not going to be around anymore, which I think spells utter disaster.
They also did The Hills Have Eyes 2 remake.
I don't think Dimension Extreme is going to be around very much longer either, to be honest.
Well, Fox Atomic, I mean, they haven't even made a fucking theatrical movie in like 2 years. So, Where the fuck were they? They should have closed down 2 years ago.
Yeah. But it's only a matter of time, folks, when more labels like this are going to go
what
on.
What about Warner Raw Feed?
I didn't even know that was still around.
It is.
I don't even think about that.
They're still releasing the Rest Stop sequel.
Did they just, like, sign some exclusive deal where all they can release is fucking Rest Stop movies?
Yeah. That's a bad business decision.
And Joey Lawrence, direct-to-DVD feature.
Oh, well, as long as you got Joey Lawrence.
Piranha 3D. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I'm interested in that. Adam Scott is taking a break from the comedy and moving over to horror. The star of Step Brothers Knocked Up is going to have to watch his step when he top-lines Alexander Aja's Piranha 3D, the remake of Joe Dante's classic film from 1978. The film starring the lovely, vivacious, terrific Elizabeth Hugh is set in Lake Havasu, Arizona, where a tremor causes the lake's floor to open, setting free scores of prehistoric piranhas. It's up to Hugh's character, the local sheriff, and her teenage son to essentially save the day. He said that Scott will play Novak, a diver for the U.S. Geological Service, who helps discover the piranha outbreak. Now, the remake hits theaters May 19th, 2010.
Yay! I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. One thing I'll give Alexander Aja is he has a weird cast with his movie. I mean, Elizabeth Shue was starring in it. I like that right there.
That's a ballsy decision.
I'll just say that because, you know, I could see her starring in something 20 years ago. But not now. I haven't even seen her in anything in years.
What was the last thing you remember her in?
Holler Man.
Was that it?
That was the last thing I
was she in Leaving Las Vegas?
Yeah, but that was like, that was in 94, 95.
I guess you could say she starred in that with Nicolas Cage. I mean.
Yeah, she showed her titties in that too.
Yeah.
Ooh, baby, Elizabeth Hugh. Oh.
Okay, here's some more news that I don't really care about, but a lot of you might. The Friday the 13th remake is officially arriving on both DVD and Blu-ray on June the 16th from old Warner Home Video.
Indeed.
It's going to come packed as a new Killer Cut Extended Edition that carries a running time of 122 minutes, which I guess that adds on about 25 extra minutes from the theatrical version of the film. Special features for the DVD include exploring the rebirth of Jason Voorhees, additional slash scenes. The Blu-ray has exclusive features containing a terror trivia track, hacking back and slashing forward featurette, the seven best kills, exploring the rebirth of Jason, and additional slasher scenes as well. The Killer Cut contains both theatrical and extended cuts. So on June 16th, look forward to seeing Jason.
Yeah. I kind of, oddly enough, do look forward to seeing that movie again. I don't know why. It's just one of those movies that I didn't really like it, but I don't know. I just sort of want to see it again to sort of see if I felt the same way about it again. I'm sort of like that. If I see a movie, especially if it's a part of a, you know, major horror franchise, like even the Rob Zombie Halloween remake, I wanted to go back and watch it again because that's just what I do with those movies.
Well, good for you, buddy. I don't want to see it. Who's that one chick, though?
Look here.
The,
America?
No, the chick that had the music staff on her arm.
Oh,
Willa Ford. Yeah. Oh, God.
There's a lot of good-looking women. There's that one... There's that one girl that was in that Shark TV show. That was in that. Mm. I can't remember. She was like the lead girlfriend in it. Good look.
All I remember is water skiing topless. I mean, that's...
Woo, baby. We're going to get the Blu-ray of that?
I don't know. I haven't got a press release for it.
Is that... I was trying to figure it out. That could be New Line, Paramount, or Warner Brothers.
It says Warner.
Yeah.
So you'll probably get that anyway.
I have no idea, but I do know that it's time to go for a break, Uncle Bill.
All righty then.
I got to go pee.
Okay, let's go.
So we will be back after this quick commercial break here on DeadBeard.com.
Here. this cheerleader USA contest travel to this secluded camp?
Hey, there is no going back.
For some, it will be the crowning achievement of their lives.
I'm going to win that queen contest.
Nerves are on edge.
There's something eating at everybody, right?
Ever since we've been here, it's never a good night.
Jealousies are exposed, and hatreds explode. This year, something evil has come over the contestants.
And she shows I'm going to kill her.
The instructors.
You're a mascot, not a human.
The judges. And the hired help.
Oh, you die.
Something is about to make them all victims of Bloody Pom-Poms. Betsy Russell. Leif Garrett. Lucinda Dickey. Lori Griffin.
We gotta walk out of here.
It's at least 40 miles.
Finally, something to die for.
So welcome back here.
It's hello, folks. Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio.
Go right back into the news portion of the show, I guess, with another interesting and entertaining story.
Indeed, I think it's my turn, isn't it?
Go ahead.
Shit. My turn.
My Bloody Valentine 3D sequel. What do you think of that?
Not much.
Director Patrick Lussier says that Lionsgate has no interest in a sequel. He spoke recently at Fagoria's Weekend of Horrors. Lussier says the studio was surprised by the film's box office success, but doesn't want to develop a follow-up and would prefer to leave the film as a one-shot. Lussier and writer Todd Farmer each have said that they have an idea as to where to go with the second chapter.
You know, Todd Farmer's from around here.
He is. But you know something funny about Todd Farmer?
He never wanted to do an interview with us.
Yeah. Even though we were from his home state, and we offered to do an interview with him, he basically told us to go fuck ourselves.
He did. Kind of in similar terms. He's like, no, I don't want to talk about that, and you go fuck yourself.
So you know something, Todd Farmer, baby? Fuck you! You piece of shit! I can't help it! That you ain't got no talent, baby! You wrote the script to Jason X that sucks fucking dick! So you could go to hell. We were offering you. We were being kind, if you will. We really didn't want to fucking talk to you. But we didn't have anybody else. We didn't have anybody down the pipe, baby. So we're being nice to you, Todd Farmer. And you turned around and was a dick to us. So now we're going to be dicks to you for life.
Hold on one second. I got to go over here and chalk up another person we have to be afraid of from now on.
Fuck you, baby. You just made that fucking fuck Dusty Rhodes like cussing somebody out like that. You can go fuck yourself and go finger fuck your papa if you will.
Mac and Dream telling you go fuck yourself, daddy.
I like Todd Farmer.
I do. He's a nice guy. Anyway, let's talk about Brad Dourif, who, of course, a lot of people might remember played the voice of Chucky from Child's Play. Well, he was recently on hand at a horror convention. And this is more this horror convention rumor type stuff. But apparently, a fan asked if he was going to play the voice of Chucky in the upcoming remake. And he told them that after he heard about the remake, he made a phone call to Don Mancini and asked if they were remaking Child's Play, and if indeed they were going to use him as the voice. And Don Mancini said they were.
Yeah.
So he's going to be back as the voice of Chucky. Isn't that neat?
I wonder if Chucky's going to look the same, though, or they're going to change his look.
I would be willing to bet any amount of money you want to bet it doesn't look the same.
No. Who knows?
It'll probably, I don't know.
I know we talk about remakes to death on this show, and there's really not a choice because, I mean, that's the majority of stuff that's coming out, quite honestly. But all of these series that are still really fresh, the original series are still really fresh in the minds of moviegoers. I mean, the last Child's Play movie just came out, like, what, 3 years ago?
Seed of Chucky.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty bad, but I don't care if they're remaking it. I just think, like back when they remade stuff like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Psycho and shit, those movies were older than fuck. You know, and they hadn't had a sequel in a long time for any of those movies. And they weren't really fresh in the minds of a lot of moviegoers. But, you know, when you're doing stuff like Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, Child's Play, what else? Hellraiser, mm-hmm. eventually. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that works.
Well, I personally have never, I won't say I've never understood why they make remakes instead of sequels, but it just seems like all that is really like trying to capitalize on the money and trying to act like they're repackaging something new when honestly all they're doing is making a sequel, really.
Yeah.
A lot of these films.
I mean, I'm not so sure that a Halloween movie directed by Rob Zombie that was just a sequel wouldn't have worked, if not as good, better than a remake.
He didn't know that, though. That wasn't his vision.
He didn't have a vision. His vision was the dollar signs.
No, he had a vision. He wanted to make half a movie that was his, half a movie that was a remake of John Carpenter. That was his vision.
Mm. But anyway, a movie.
Put both of them up.
A movie I've heard about for a long time. All the Boys Love Mandy Lane, Uncle Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Because I heard Mandy Lane's got a nice ass.
Mandy Lane, sweet poontang.
The loveliest boobaloo, baby. The film is finally getting a theatrical release in North America next July 17th. I guess this July 17th. Starring the beautiful Amber Heard. It's about a group of high schoolers that invite Mandy Lane, played by Heard, a good girl who became quite hot over the summer, to a weekend party at a secluded ranch. And while the festivities rage on, a number of the partygoers begin to drop quite mysteriously, Uncle Bill. So, I don't know if this is a wide theatrical release. I'm guessing not. But hopefully that means by Halloween we'll get a DVD release.
You know, I've really wanted to see two movies, and I don't know why this reminded me of this, but two movies, and The Girl Next Door is one of them that I've wanted to see for the longest time. We've never gotten that. I don't know why. Never had a chance to see it. I hear that it's exceptionally creepy and disturbing, which is great.
I don't see how it could be better than The Lost, though, as another Jack
Ketchum. Yeah, it's supposed to be, though. It's supposed to be
I don't know.
So, I want to see that, and I want to see this movie.
Yeah, and Martyrs.
Yeah, and Martyrs. I do want to see Martyrs as well. We're supposed to be getting Martyrs. Get anything anymore.
It's a bunch of shit.
I don't have any more news stories, I'll just tell you.
I don't either, so let's talk about horror conventions, Uncle Bill. We got a big one coming up this weekend. The Full Moon Tattoo and Horror Festival in Nashville, Tennessee. We could go to this, but we're too sorry.
That's true. Nashville's what, about 5 hours away?
Yeah. 6 hours, actually.
Yeah, no.
6 or 7 hours.
No.
Yeah. And a lot of people think that we live close to Nashville just because it's in Tennessee. Not really the case. I mean, I think Nashville's like, what, in central Tennessee, and we're in eastern Kentucky. It's quite a distance. Anyway, fullmooninc.net. You can go to the website. Some of the guests include Sid Haig, William Forsyth, Ken Foree, Jason Mewes, John the Beast Dugan, Gunnar Hansen, Ed Neal, the luthiest Danielle Harris, C.J. Graham, Kane Hodder, Stacy Dixon, Derek Mears, the Ladies of the Evil Dead, and special surprise guest, last minute edition, Uncle Bill, Jim O'Rear. Fuck yeah!
I'm really looking forward to hearing about that, I guess, because we ain't going.
Although Stacy and Ben Dixon are really nice people, they actually
they're good folk.
Came up to the Deadpit booth and talked with us the Friday night show last year. And
I wasn't around when that happened, I don't think. That must have been on Friday.
It was on Friday.
Although Stacey Dixon was scared to death of us one year. I know that. I don't know if we ever talked about that.
Yeah, we probably didn't talk about that. We were at the Tiffany Shepis actually chose to sit with us at the banquet last year, I guess in 2007 at the Friday night show. And, of course, some friends of Tiffany's came over just to talk to her, and they included Ed Neal's wife, which they were both cool. I mean, I don't think they were freaked out by us too much because Ed Neal lives in, like, South Texas, so he's used to people with accents. Stacey Dixon, though, was there by herself. I don't think Ben Dixon was there, and she had no clue who we were. And she was sort of like, it was that look. Like, she was sort of, like, confused.
She had that look. Yeah. Who the fuck are you? What the fuck do you want?
She was sort of confused as to why we were there, you know.
Who the fuck are you?
And then, but I guess over the course of the year, she actually maybe listened to the show, or because Ben Dixon sort of knew who we were and talked to him about it, and she was really cool the year after, so they're cool people by my standards.
They're good folks, the Dixons. We don't get to talk to them quite enough. So,
I don't know if Ben Dixon's movies are ever going to come out, though. Wolfsbane and what was that other one he's working on?
Scarecrow. Wasn't there one called Scarecrow?
We got that one.
Oh, do we? Okay, DVDs for April the 28th. Next Tuesday, you've got The Centerfold Girls, special edition from Dark Sky. Cold Eyes of Fear, special edition from Redemption USA. The Gray Man from Monarch, Martyrs Special Edition from the Weinstein Company, which I still haven't gotten, son of a bitch. One-Eyed Monster Special Edition.
Woo!
The Possessed, Psychos in Love. I actually remember that movie.
Yeah,
I remember
that was a Wizard video release.
I remember the box art from VHS.
Everybody remembers the box art, but the movie's horrible.
Yeah, Psychos in Love Special Edition from Shriek Show and Media Blasters. And then this one, I mean, it's always a pleasure to have these kind of films on here, though. Satanic Sluts 3, Scandalized.
Ooh, baby!
The She-Beast Special Edition from Dark Sky. Thinathethia 2-disc Special Edition from Funimation. Good Lord. The Uninvited with Elizabeth Banks, which we should have somebody doing a review of sometime because I ain't going to watch it, from Paramount. And While She Was Out Special Edition from Anchor Bay. Those are your DVD releases for April the 28th. I'd love to know what the hell you're doing.
I'm going to pick a song to sing on here. Let's see if I can remember this. Now when the days go to sleep and the full moon looks, and the night is so black that the darkness cooks, and you come creeping and make me do things don't want to do or something. Fuck you! Anyway,
what the fuck was that?
I don't know.
That wasn't even leading to anything. What the hell?
No, it wasn't. I can't help it. But you leave me alone. I just want to do something inventive on here. How's everybody doing out there tonight? Anyway, we're going to take a break. We do have a couple movies to talk about for Sequelitis this week. And we'll be talking about them after this brief break here on Deadpeer.
Oh.com!
I just stuck my pinky finger up his butt.
A certain kind of girl joins Pi Theta Sorority. A girl who likes to party and likes to get close to her friends. A girl whose extracurricular activities were more daring than most. A girl who could turn her fantasies into reality.
One more sling won't set us back, Annie.
Then again, Pi Theta was different from other sororities.
I'll get back at you, the last thing I do!
Because in this sorority, nothing is off limits. As long as it's fun for the girls. So when it came time to say goodbye, they decided to make real sure that no one would ever forget the girls in the house on Sorority Row.
Get this party started, Uncle Bill, because it is sequelitis. This is actually the fifth sequelitis show we've ever done.
Oh my God.
It's a sequelitis five, a new beginning.
I can't remember all the different sequels that we've done. I can't even remember all the different franchises.
I have no idea.
Done. But I know for a fact we've never done any of the movies in either one of these series yet. So
we haven't yet.
That'll be fun.
So, yeah. So, we have two different films. If you've never heard of sequelitis show before, we're going to discuss both of the movies in great detail, sort of like a review. And these are both sequels that really never needed to be made, but they thankfully did make them because they've brought us enjoyment for the last 10, 15 years since they came out.
Interestingly enough, though, not only did they make these sequels, but in both these cases, they made at least three or four more sequels to both these movies.
Yeah, I think they're still making Amityville sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort. But I guess the first one we can start out with would be Amityville 4, The Evil Escapes. And I have always held a special place in my heart for these Amityville direct-to-video sequels. And they made quite a bit of them. I think Part 4 is really when they started hitting their stride in just taking various items from the Amityville house.
Mm-hmm.
Because after a point in time, the owners of the Amityville house didn't want them using the house for movies. I mean, they were making movies back to back to back for like 3 years. So the best way to do that is take an item, a household item from the house, which will, in essence, possess another house.
Yeah, which, in this case, is hilarious, because, first of all, this movie has Patty Duke in it.
Right.
Anything Patty Duke's in is guaranteed to be quality film.
Right.
It's guaranteed to also make you think that it's like
a after-school
film.
I used to love the Patty Duke show. Remember that?
Huh.
Nickelodeon back in the day. Good stuff.
But okay, I'll give you some backstory behind what's going on in this movie. In Amityville, after the big Amityville 3D fiasco, apparently somebody in Amityville decided to have a yard sale. And in that yard sale, there's a big-ass killer lamp. And this lamp has all the evil spirits that were once inside of the Amityville house. Okay, it contains those. So this woman, this older lady, buys the lamp to send to her sister, and in the process also cuts her finger on the side of the lamp. Well, she takes it. She sends it to her sister. Her sister happens to be the mother of Patty Duke.
Indeed.
And Patty Duke's moving her little bratty-ass Nickelodeon-looking children into this house. And the one kid looks like she's got Down syndrome.
Patty Duke, her husband recently died, right? That was the whole story, I think. Was that.
Yeah, she's a widow. So they're moving all of them into this house, and the lamp gets there around the time that they get there because the aunt sent it to their mother. And around that same time, too, the aunt starts to get really, really sick. Like the cut on her finger becomes infected with evil, I guess. And
infected with evil.
And she gets progressively sicker throughout the film. And right around when they get the lamp, some really strange stuff starts happening in the house. Like, for instance, appliances start to turn themselves on and off. There's one instance where a kid comes over to fix the garbage disposal, and he gets banged up pretty bad there because it turned itself on. And nobody can figure out what's going on until a priest who has some experience with the original Amityville.
Like, a lot of these Amityville movies are exactly the same.
They are. They're just, like, different items from the house.
That's what makes this a great... And then, like, the young daughter of Patty Duke sort of becomes possessed as well by staring into this lamp. And she sort of... I think it had, like, some sort of thing where she thought that the lamp was her deceased dad.
That's right, yeah. At the end of it, she goes ape shit and tries to kill the priest who's performing the exorcism on the lamp.
Yes. An exorcism on a lamp.
And because she thinks the lamp's her dad. So, there's other stuff going on in this movie, too, though, that's hilarious. For one thing, the lamp itself, you can tell that they really want it to look menacing and creepy, but it really looks fucking hilarious. It looks like something that Betty Lawson would have on sale during Halloween. Yeah. Like, it's absolutely nothing.
Anything in Big Lots is creepy, though.
And that's true.
But the thing I always remember about this movie is...
Jane White.
The old woman, yeah. Yeah. And she's actually, like, selling life insurance now or something on TV. I don't know if you remember that.
She's still alive?
Yeah, well, I mean, a few years ago she was selling life insurance on TV. She's one of those spokeswomen for... But her, I mean, she's hilarious because you can tell that they just... Like, she was a pretty well-known actress, I guess, but it's like one of those deals where they just hired her, and probably a day or two later, she starts on the movie or something. That's what it seemed like. But the one actor in the movie I always laugh my ass off at, because he's just a goofy-looking little motherfucker, is Patty Duke's son in the movie. And come to find out that he actually has some sort of growth disorder, which is why he looks so odd. I mean, he was actually, I think, 20-some years old when he was in this movie. He wasn't really a kid.
You're kidding.
No. So, but he looks like...
That explains a lot.
He's like an Elton John stunt double or something. That's what I always say. He's just a really goofy-looking little motherfucker. I don't know.
So, I mean, if you are even bothering asking yourself at this point, like, why we picked this film for sequelitis, I think that the plot premise alone is enough, that there's a killer lamp.
It's just hilarious that not only they made one movie like this, where it was just a fucking killer appliance in the house, you also had Amityville, It's About Time, with a possessed clock, and you also had... you know, the Amityville dollhouse, stuff like that. It didn't end after that. They kept coming up with more shit.
They thought this was a good idea. They were like, oh, we can get behind this. We just have like a yard sale full of demonic shit.
Yeah, so I... But it all started with Amityville. It's the evil escapes, I guess, with the evil lamp.
I don't even know what else to say about this movie. The acting in it is very much akin to, like, a Lifetime movie. It looks like a Lifetime movie. And I don't even think that's just because of Patty Duke. I think it just really looks like a Lifetime movie anyway.
Yeah, it was a cheaply made movie. And the DVD, which I got this DVD back in the day at Walmart. And it's like one of those deals where the DVD has, like, four or five different covers to it. And I think I got the funniest looking cover.
By far.
It's like this silly looking family photo or something where each of the actors are looking in a different direction for some reason.
And they all have different expressions. Yeah. Like,
I don't know.
It's random. Like, you got the priest who's like dead serious about something. You got Patty Duke over there that looks like she just like lost her car keys. You got that little kid that looks like somebody just stuck a thumb up her butt or something. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but I mean, this movie is pure entertainment. I mean, is the thing I can say about this. And it's one of those where I would have to highly recommend it for everybody. Sterling Entertainment Fremantle Media released this. Is this David Sterling that calls into the show? I think it is. I don't know, maybe we'll have to ask him.
You're
about
kidding.
That. I think it's his company that released this. But good job, sir. I enjoy this movie. I actually have a big collection of Amityville films, and this is one that I went back and watched a couple of times just because it's really enjoyable, and I just love movies like this. So that's Amityville 4, though, The Evil Escapes. You can get the DVD uber cheap.
Yeah, and with a name like Amityville 4, It has to be good.
Hell yeah. I even like the fact that they, you gotta love the DVDs that come out that don't even use the DVD logo. They make their own DVD logo on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I highly recommend this movie though.
Anyway, that's Amityville 4, The Evil Escapes. What's the second film, Uncle Bill?
Well, we don't actually have a DVD for this because I don't think a DVD for this exists.
It does in the hearts of horror fans and bootleg dealers worldwide.
But Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, You Better Watch Out, is a very odd continuation of Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. Now, here's the thing. Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 was not really a continuation, or actually was more of a continuation of Part 1 in and of the fact that only about, 30 or 40% of it was actual film. The rest of it was flashback sequences from the first one. So this film is basically a lot of flashback sequences from both films intertwined with scenes of Bill Moseley plays the brother, Ricky Caldwell, in the film. And Laura is the sister, I guess.
Is that how they connect them? I didn't know they were.
I thought that was what it was.
I don't know, because Laura has another brother, which his name's Chris. And this guy looks like he's a fucking member of Warren or something.
He does.
He's got the thickest fucking chest hair I think I've ever seen on anybody.
So, start of the film, you've got Ricky in a coma, and he's in like, he's in restraints in a hospital, and he's got this fucking thing on his head, okay? Which, it kind of looks like that thing Brainiac wears in the DC Comics, like Superman Universe, but it's quite obviously just a bowl that somebody shoved on his head and then put a brain.
Anwar a little bit.
Yeah, like put the top part of a brain inside of a bowl and stuck that on his head.
Put a bunch of liquid in there, like Kool-Aid or something.
It's one of the silliest looking damn things that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is the Laura character, she's blind, but she's also psychic.
Which, of course, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little odd. And, she has visions of the deranged Ricky, getting her and her family. So, of course, that turns out to be true. I think she goes home to her grandmother's with Kreth. And his girlfriend. And, like, okay, half of this movie is just them traveling or in their grandmother's house looking for their grandmother. The other half of it is just scenes of Bill Moseley walking.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
And Bill Moseley doesn't really say anything hardly in this movie. I mean,
doesn't he have one line?
He might have one or two lines.
Yeah, and most of the shit in this movie, like the dialogue and stuff, is absolutely horrible. It doesn't really make any sense either, I know.
Yeah, we were talking about a lot of scenes that were like, that would have been good fits for clever one-liners, but they didn't make any fucking sense. Now, that was a problem. And I was like thinking, why the hell are you saying that? How does that make any sense? How is that clever at all? Like, the one thing that I always remembered I was laughing at is Ricky actually kills the Chris character two different times, but when he comes back the first time, his line is it live or is it Memorex? And I was like, what? What the fuck does that mean? And there's a lot of lines like that in the end, like, there's another one. That is one of Bill Moseley's only lines in the movie where the Laura character at the end just says, Merry Christmas. And then you see like a fade in of the Ricky character played by Bill Moseley that just says, and a Happy New Year.
That's right.
Shit.
So here's one thing that I want to know though, and I didn't even look this up, but do you know who directed this fucking movie?
Monty Hellman.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Is that a real person? Or is that just like a name?
That is definitely a real person. I mean, I think he went on to direct actual movies that people know. I mean, he's an older, he actually directed part of that Trapped Ashes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He did.
Trilogy, and he's an older filmmaker. I mean, I know he's like in his 70s. Directed The Terror. What else? Cockfighter. That was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he didn't do too many films. In fact, I think Silent Night, Deadly Night 3 was the last movie.
Yeah, that's probably shut him down. He directed
for, you know, almost 20 years, I think. So
here's the problem with this movie, though. It's not a fun movie. Like, you would think that the premise of it would be pretty fun, but it's not like either one of the first two films. It's not... It doesn't have the charm of the second film or the over-the-top intensity of the first film. It's just... Like, I found most of the first half of it to be excruciatingly fucking boring.
Yeah. It really is.
And I mean, it's not even as good as The Toymaker. I mean, The Toymaker was epically genius in how bad it was. But
yeah, The Toymaker was like, it had a really stupid kid in it that you could laugh at and enjoy. I mean, this did have some scenes that were funny in it. I thought that the Chris character was hilarious just because, like, the way he looked. Like, he had this... like teased up curly, you know, hair metal era hairstyle, and he was a horrible actor. I don't know. I'm guessing a lot of these people didn't act in anything else, and just the way that he delivered lines, and the lead actress, she did a horrible job as well. I mean, who the fuck casts your lead actress in a horror movie, and she can't fucking see? Okay, and she's supposed to be. And what's so funny is, she has visions in her head that causes her to scream.
That sounds like a line out of a metal song.
She
has visions in her head that causes her to scream!
Anyway, there's... Yeah. I wonder what Bill Moseley thinks about this movie now, though.
See, what year did this come out?
89.
Okay, both these movies came out in 89 then, which is an odd coincidence, I guess, indeed, in this case. But here's what I want to know. What was Bill Moseley doing in between the time that Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 came out and Devil's Reject, or like House of Thousand Corpses came out? Like, how the hell was Bill Moseley staying alive?
Well, I mean, when we talked to him in that interview, I think he was saying that he was appearing as Chop Top in a haunted house. And that's how Rob Zombie found him.
Yeah.
So he was doing conventions and, you know, the odd movie roles like The Convent with Coolio and shit like that.
Forgotten about that, yeah. As far as this movie goes, though, oh, Jesus. This movie's not even, like, on the same... fun level as Amityville 4, I don't think.
Yeah, but it does have goofy shit in it.
It does, that.
Like you were saying, the fucking thing that's on Bill Moseley's head. What happened is, like they tell in the backstory that, although I don't think this ever happened in Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, that the police shot part of Bill Moseley's brain off, and they reconstructed his brain, and they put that little dome thing on it to keep it safe.
Right. That happens all the time, though, really.
Yeah. But, yeah. And what else can we say, though? The lines, I think some of the line delivery is the funniest parts about this movie. It's a really dark movie, though. It wasn't well shot at all.
And that might be the copy that we have of it, though. I don't even know how much of that is... Because we've just got like a DVD-R copy from a VHS rip, I'm sure. So
it
looked
pretty decent to me, though. I mean, as far as like the lines.
Yeah, it looked better than Slaughter High, so.
It sure did.
DVD.
But yeah, I mean, that's Amityville, The Evil Escapes, and Silent Night, Deadly Night 3. You better watch out.
So if you're going to pick up any Silent Night, Deadly Night movies, pick up 2 and 5. I'm thinking 5 is the toy maker.
And the first one, of course.
So yeah, but 2 and 5 both have more, like, the comedic stuff in them than even, definitely than part 1 does.
Yeah.
3, just if you want to see Bill Moseley look absolutely ridiculous throughout a movie, that'd be fine.
Is it live, or is it Memorex?
That'll be a t-shirt soon.
Yeah. So, we will be back with your fan questions, and we're going to have reviews a little bit later, and other good horror talk goodness after this break on Dead Pit.
Dot com, buddy!
This little piggy went to the market. This little piggy stayed home. This little piggy had roast beef. This little piggy had none.
And this little pig ran wee, wee, wee all the way home.
Slaughterhouse. Slaughterhouse. Rated R.
Hope everybody enjoyed the sequelitis portion of the show. I mean, we always try to come up with some new inventive movies and things that people might not even think about on here. We've already done all the stuff like Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, stuff like that. We're trying to pick some more obscure titles. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. And if you didn't like it, fuck you.
Everybody you know and like.
Yeah, so we do have a few fan questions to get to. We're going to go ahead and do that. And we want to remind people and we're actually thinking about changing it up a little bit because, I mean, we have been answering your questions for like over 3 years and you can still call in and ask us stuff. And I mean, we probably will read fan questions from now on in, but we're going to try to think of something a little different that we might be able to do, you know, change it up a little bit. I think we should do that.
We're going to bring back the poll.
Yeah. Everybody can sit on my poll.
The Dead Pit Pole.
Yeah, so anyway, the fan questions. But if you have any ideas, stuff that we maybe could put in this section, you can do that. Or, I don't know. I mean, I was just thinking of changing it around a little bit. And maybe we'll think of some stuff we could do.
You know, Rick of the Dead actually had a pretty interesting video that he did recently that I thought might be a good idea. Is like have something like a director's spotlight or a film spotlight or something.
Yeah.
To that effect, where you could do like certain directors and that people might not know about and the films they've done and stuff.
Yeah. That might work. Who knows? We'll think about it. I mean, I just, you know, want to keep it fresh over here at Dead Pit.
Yeah.
So anyway, some of the fan questions we got this week. The first one's from our good buddy Mormo. He says, falling from somewhere and landing on sharp things is a classic death scene going back to Hitchcock. Have there ever been a death scene where someone falls and gets impaled all in one take without an edit?
Yep. In See No Evil, when Kane falls off that, there's no takes on that. He actually went straight down.
Kane died.
They killed him. Yeah.
Yeah. And the same thing happened with Roy Burns from Friday the 13th Part 5.
I think they killed a man they killed a woman in Suspiria as well. They hung her. Yeah. She fell. No, I don't think that's possible, is it? Like, that would have to be...
No. I mean, I don't understand what he's really asking. I mean...
Well, it seems like he's
is
asking...
Is there a dummy that you just let fall over onto spikes or something? Because, you know...
There's been all kinds of movies with that in it, where they threw a dummy off a cliff or off a building or something like that and let it fall without, in one take. But I've never seen anybody attempt a stunt where, like, they let a guy fall off of something, land on something else in one take and not... That's just impossible. You kill somebody.
I don't think that would work, Mormo. We don't want real people to die in horror films.
No. Although, I have seen a guy fall off a building and, like, bounce on the ground, but that was in one of those faces
no,
of death.
Yeah, that might have been... Yeah, they might have done it in traces or faces.
That was real.
That was real. That was the real
deal.
One
take.
No edits. And also, like, I guess the, if you have any of that early World Trade Center footage, you can see folks diving off the World Trade Center to their death, which, you know, I mean, that is one thing, going back at it, that I watched that really fucking disturbed me. I mean, even more than seeing the plane go into the buildings and shit when that happened, I mean, But actually thinking, and it would probably be the same way. I mean, I would probably rather do that than burn to death, which is what would have happened, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's just so, I don't know. I mean, you would never ever think that people would be doing that. But, fuck, that's real horror for you, I guess.
You know what's worse than that, though? I was watching a guy sit down on a pickle jar, get it halfway up his ass, and then it breaks.
Yeah, he willingly does that as well.
Did you ever watch that?
No.
God, I did. I made the unfortunate mistake of watching that. Buddy.
Does it look like he's putting ketchup all over him pickles?
There's nothing in the pickle jar, thank God.
Oh, really?
But.
Well, if there was something in the pickle jar, then that would make it even better for him.
Oh, my God. Like, I don't even want to think. That is the most disturbing thing I've ever seen on the internet.
Even more than the ill anal porn?
Yeah, even more than anything I've ever seen. So, if you have a chance, check out One Guy, One Jar is what it's called.
Oh, God.
Or don't check it out. That'd probably be better.
One Guy, One Jar.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Okay, so anyway, on with the questions. Dr. Bo writes in and says, "Hey, guys, I discovered your show some weeks ago on Rumorg Radio link page and have been since catching up on your archives. I enjoy every minute of it. It keeps me from checking IMDb and news sites at work while still getting my movie trivia and infos fixed. About last week's show, April 10th, 2009, in which the news broke that Freddy Krueger is being played by Jackie Earle Haley, I just wanted to add a comment. I've seen Watchmen, in which Haley plays Rorschach, the masked vigilante wearing a mask made of changing ink blots, and it's a terrific character and a wonderful performance. This character makes the film worth for every fan at least to give it a try. The character is awesome, extreme, psycho, violent, and uncompromising. Have a killer design and a dark persona that many recent horror movie characters don't even come close to." Huh. I haven't seen it. "In short, I find that since any way they'll make a new nightmare..." This guy, I'm going to fucking smack the shit out of this guy for writing this. "Haley casting is a good news." Buddy, who wrote this? Did a goddamn 5-year-old sit down and write this? I'm sorry.
He's French-Canadian, dude.
Sorry. "Of course, it'll never be like Robert Englund, but I think a great character can gain from being reinterpreted like it's been the case for Dracula, the Frankenstein monster, and the Wolfman. This is slightly different since these characters come from prose, and Freddy has been created first and foremost as a movie character. But for every dozen and dozen of crappy remakes we get, pearls like the Hammer Horror..." Mostly remakes from Universal Classics. "John Carpenter's The Thing, Cronenberg's The Fly, De Palma's Scarface. Let's hope this one can sit alongside that list."
You notice something, though, about the list of horror movies you mentioned? Or films in general? They're all old. Nobody can mention a classic or just a great remake that was new, because they really don't exist. I mean, there's some that's better than others. But to me... I can't really, I mean, I would say probably my favorite one of, all the recent remakes would be the one we just saw, Last House on the Left. I mean, I need to watch it again, of course, but I mean, that would probably be one of my favorites, if not my favorite. I mean, like the Dawn of the Dead remake as well. What else?
That's about it.
Yeah. I mean, the Omen remake was okay. The Black Christmas remake was sort of watchable up until about the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's really not been any film that's been a remake recently that I would consider classic in any way. Like, even the Last House on the Left remake, I wouldn't consider that to be classic. It's very good. It's a very watchable film, so is Dawn of the Dead. But that, out of, like, 20 remakes that I've seen, you got two that I would consider even going back and watching
again. Yeah, and in all honesty, this, like I was saying, I would... when it comes to the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, Jackie Earle Haley, you know what? I mean, it could have been a worse choice, I think. They could have got Billy Bob Thornton, which that would probably have been hilarious if they would have got him. But
yeah, especially considering how he is right now. Like,
loony.
But he got, like, Dr. Bo goes on to say, though, he talks about a horror film called Evil Word that's a French-Canadian horror movie that he recommends for everybody to go out and purchase. And I'm sorry, Dr. Bo, I didn't realize that you were French-Canadian while I was reading that exactly, so I guess all typos and spelling errors can be considered under that.
Indeed. His real name is Charles Emmanuel Ouellette.
Ouellette.
Ouellette. Hey, I wonder if he knows Frenchy Martin.
I bet he does.
And the Rougeau brothers.
Yeah.
We're all American boys. All American boys. What do you think about that, though? The Rougeau brothers.
He's a big fan of Dino Bravo.
Back in the day, they wanted to be Americans instead of French Canadians.
I don't even know.
They had the song All American Boys. It was great. You remember that?
I don't remember that, actually.
I was watching SummerSlam, one of the, in the anthology, you know, and they were in it. And I remember that song. I was about to shit myself laughing. Because it really is them singing it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, but only one more question. But what the fuck?
Well, here's the thing. It's up to you all. I mean, we can only read what's written into us, so if you want this to be a shortened program, continue to purposely ignore the fan writing question, and that'll give me a lot more time to go put down sawdust and play with my butt.
So, Phantom of the Carolina says, are there any DVD plans for Creepy Scrappy Movie Reviews or Diary of the Dead Pit?
Well, I don't know about the first one, but I've still got a Diary of the Dead Pit. Oh, DVD collection.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this last night, but what good would that really do, though? Since they're all, like, all this is on YouTube, the quality is going to be shit no matter what you put it on, because it's all done on webcams and stuff.
Yeah, although it was on webcam.
I can't really see, like...
I don't know. I mean, we probably could just do a... If people just wanted the DVDs, we could do it and sell them. But like he said, I mean, the quality is not going to be that great on it. But, I mean, we could probably put every one of the Diary of the Dead Pits on there and the Creepy Crappy Movie Reviews as well. We could have, like, a Dead Pit bonus disc. You know what would be a good idea? We could actually have the Dead Pit on the Road Deluxe Edition that would include that with it.
That'll be the new Ultimate Edition, won't it?
The Ultimate Edition of Dead Pit on the Road.
It comes speaking with two of which, pairs of 3D glasses, too.
Speaking of which, though, we sold our very last Dead Pit on the Road DVD this week.
We sold it. We're dead now.
Yeah. And we kept the last one. So whoever gets the last one, you have a special DVD of Haddonfield and the insert for Haddonfield, which was long out of print. Right, Uncle Bill? You can't get that anymore.
No, you can never get that again, as a matter of fact. It will never be reprinted in any form.
We were saving it for our very last DVD. But have no fear. The DVDs will return soon, hopefully. We'll have more of them available. So if you still want to order them, that's fine. We will get to your order swiftly.
We'll get to it as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah, buddy, yeah.
Operators are standing by.
Yeah, and we're in pre-production, I guess, for Dead Pit on the Road Season 2. And we're going to include a lot of interesting extras on that. We included some decent extras on the first season, but we're going to try to include some never-before-seen stuff.
Yeah, we're going to show you how we do the casting process for Dead Pit on the Road.
Go through the script and all that. So, at any rate, we will be back with DVDs!
Yay, we're going to talk about some movies on here.
And a lot of announcements and stuff, too. We do have quite a bit. So we will be back after this break on Dead Pit.
That's it. Rock.com.
Hello, this is Sonny Landrum.
And I'm Ed Ramsey.
Telling you to check out DeadPit.com Saturday Night Mass.
Yeah, a lot of people recognize me from Deadly Friend. that you're going to recognize syndicated Uncle Bill from DeadPig.com.
Every week, talk to the Uncle Bill and the Creepy Kentuckian live over at Draw TV.
You should go check it out now!
DeadPig.com, Saturday Night Mass. It'll make you want to chew all night.
Hell yeah!
Hello, you shit-eating motherfuckers. My name is Charles from the UK. I'm here on behalf of Deadpit Radio and their exclusive MySpace podcast. Your favorite hick-dick horror hosts from Kentucky, CK and Uncle Bill, are there every week talking not only horror, but current events.
We can talk about James Brown dying.
Yeah, or Gerald Ford.
Papa's got a brand new body bag, if you will.
That's awful. You're going straight to hell.
Professional wrestling.
Well, the new wrestling is pretty shitty.
Yeah, there's a big threat up there right now about TNA. And since I'm sure most people listening to this probably don't even have any idea what the hell TNA is. Cause
it's not tits and ass, just so you know. It's like a new wrestling promotion.
Yeah, total nonstop action.
Yeah.
What did
Fire Mike Tanay and Dawn. There's a dragon on the blade! West.
Yeah. Cutlery specialist from QVC.
Mixed martial arts.
One of them that he wants to go after is like the best fucking guy, like Tito Ortiz and
Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, those two fucking guys.
He's crazier than hell if he wants to do that, because Chuck Liddell beat shit out of Tito Ortiz.
Yeah. Then they have a pay per view this past weekend.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
He beat Tito Ortiz.
That was the second time he beat him.
Yeah. So Chuck Liddell beat the dog shit out of you.
That'd be hilarious.
I don't even watch that shit, but I just guarantee you would.
Stupid children.
First of all, you got the Nintendo Wii.
Wii! I like me a Wii, mommy!
To listen to all of this and a shitload more, go over to myspace.com/deadpitradio. Until next time, I'm Charles from the UK, saying, keep it real, bitches.
Demko from Blood Type Online, and you're listening to the best radio show in the motherfucking land, DeadPit.com.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
I am Uncle Bill.
And this is the DVD review portion of the show. My God, what do you think of that?
Oh, I don't think much of it right now, but we're going to be talking about some awesome DVDs soon.
We sure are. But we do have big announcements to make, Uncle Bill. Real big announcements.
Uh-oh.
First up, all of the Dead Pit fans in Texas, you be sure to stop by the Texas Frightmare Weekend. It's actually 1 week away now, Uncle Bill. And you can meet up with a fuckload of horror stars. We're talking about Toby Hooper, Karen Black, Alice Cooper, Toba Hooper, baby!
It's the Hooper Cooper connection, daddy!
Shit, there's a ton of people. I can't even remember all the people that they have on there. You can go to TexasFrightmareWeekend.com. And also, Dead Pit, the Texas chapter, will be in the house doing interviews. They already have a big one lined up. And if it happens, it's going to be fucking awesome. And, fuck, there's all kinds of other shit going on.
And let me,
Texas Frightmare Weekend.
Let me tell you this. This year, I really want everybody that's Dead Pit fans to come out and support Jay and Ray. I mean, we're not going to be there. Let's not leave that impression in any way. But they are representing us, okay? Yeah. And they're representing Dead Pit. We're going to have all the Dead Pit merchandise down there that you can possibly...
That's right. Actually, the last two copies of Dead Pit on the Road Season 1, we actually found these. They were in the back of Uncle Bill's Jeep.
That's true.
Yeah.
I didn't remember that.
But. And we got them there. They probably won't last long, so if you get there early enough to grab one, you can snag it and jack off all over it like I did the Monster Squad once you got it.
Point being, though, if you are a fan, if you're a listener of the show in any way, I want you to make sure that if you're at that convention, Texas Frontmare Weekend, you go over and at least say hi to Jay and Ray. Hopefully buy something, but at the very least, go over and introduce yourself.
Hi, Jay. Tell them, all right.
You think they're doing a great job, because they are. They've only been kicked out of one convention so far, so, you know, as Meatloaf would say, one out of two is not bad. Actually, I think he said something to that effect.
Yeah. Also, though, like you were saying, we've got the DVDs. We're going to have the Dead Pit t-shirts there, hot off the presses. We got the MySpace sessions. Buddy, we got all kinds of shit there. And some big interviews are in the works, from what I understand. I know Jay, he's done a lot of preparation this time around. He's already got some lined up, so it's a pretty big deal, Uncle Bill. So also, we got to put this over. The lovely ladies of Dead Pit, Uncle Bill. Oh, God! I'm surprised it took us this long to do this. But now, featured on there, we have a lady section where it has some voluptuous, titty-rific, I don't know.
Spontaneous combustion of the boobies.
It'll cause your dong to spontaneous combust.
Let me tell you something, though. We're going to have a special section for this up now. So if you are, in fact, a lovely lady...
And you love the Dead Pit.
And you like to come on to the lovely lady section, if you will, roam around it, then all you have to do is buy a damn t-shirt, take some pictures of yourself, hopefully the more risque the better.
Yeah.
And we will put you up in the lovely, there's a panel that you have to go through first. Yeah. I mean, it's...
The lovely ladies of Dead Pit board.
Yeah, we have to have some sort of standards and practice, but... More than likely, we will put you up in the lovely ladies of Dead Pit section.
I'm asking a woman, though, to take a Dead Pit t-shirt and cut little holes in it and have your little nipples sticking out of it. That's what I want, baby. Anyway, the ladies we have up there now, we have Lennox Miller, the very first model of Dead Pit back in the day. And I was actually talking to her again recently. God. Fucking hot. What's that? We've got Elska McCain up there.
Woo, baby. Daddy.
Woo, baby. We actually have Tiffany Shepis up
there.
And brand new, hot off the presses, from the lovely town of Hindman. I think she's from Hindman. I don't know.
I believe so.
From our home state of Kentucky, Heather Price is on there, and let me tell you something. She got a Dead Pit bumper sticker, and you won't feed what's you covered up with that bumper sticker, baby.
And let me just
get y'all hot and bothered, if you will.
Let me just say that the price is indeed right.
So yeah, I mean, we want to have more lovely ladies of Dead Pit, so. That means all you hot-ass women out there need to get your Dead Pit shirts and, or anything Dead Pit related. Shit, you print off a little, sticker or something, put it on your titties like that Heather Price did. That'd be good enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't, you can practice printing something off the computer just as long as there's titties involved.
Titties and ass.
That's right.
Doesn't get any better than that. Unless you have barbecue sauce all over the boobies.
That sounds like a good meal.
So, yeah, we got all that. And remember, Saturday Nightmares is this week. You can join us. Blog TV, midnight Saturday night. We'll be having a crazy old time. It was a packed audience last week, even with the absence of Uncle Bill.
Buddy, fuck you.
People don't even give a fuck about you.
Talk about me like that.
So, I guess that's it. We can get into the DVD reviews because we do have a couple to talk about. What do you want to talk about first, Uncle Bill?
I would very much like to talk about My Best Friend's Vampire. A 1986 classic starring...
It says it's from 1988 on here.
Oh, does it? Maybe I had that in there wrong. Okay, 1988. Starring Robert Sean Leonard.
Of Leonard Part 6.
directed by Jimmy Houston, who, like I said before, is the guy that directed Final Exam. God bless his heart. I don't even know. Like, it's hard for me to imagine that a guy that directed Final Exam could actually direct anything halfway worth of shit. But he managed to do that.
I mean, yeah, this is halfway worth of shit. It's not really... I wouldn't call it a classic by any means, but...
Well, you're a dickhead, though.
Look here, son. I'm just being honest. But the movie involves Jeremy, which is played by Robert Sean Leonard. He was also in House MD. Everybody remembers that. He's sort of like this nerdy guy at school, and he has dreams about women all the time. He's a dork, I guess, the best way to say it. And he's also a delivery boy for the market.
He sure is. He delivers fresh milk.
He does. He delivered, so he's sent to this old house to deliver groceries, of course, and sees a voluptuous, gothic woman there that's sort of hitting on him. And he thinks he's going to get a piece of that ass.
He's going to tap that vampire ass, daddy. So, but here's the problem, though. Yeah, she happens to be a vampire.
She is. And, of course, he is bitten by the hot-ass vampire. And comedy ensues. He's a fucking teenage vampire.
Well, if you've ever seen Once Bitten, it's almost exactly like the same movie. He's a high school kid. He's nerdy. He's got a couple friends. He gets bitten by a vampire. He starts going through all the same changes and stuff like that. I don't know. I think Once Bitten came before this movie. I'm pretty sure it did. But he starts to get pale, and he doesn't have a lot of the same problems as like a normal vampire. Like, he can go out in the daylight and stuff like that because he's not undead, as it's explained in the movie. Which, by the way, it's explained to him by this guy who's kind of like his mentor vampire guy along this journey, who meets up with him after school, kind of like similar to the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, where she has like a centuries-old guy who tries to help her, except this is a vampire.
Your kid.
And he brings him a book that tells him everything he needs to know about turning into a vampire and all this stuff. So around the same time, though, he's fallen for this woman who's in his class, and he starts to ask her out on dates and stuff like that. And I guess that it's called My Best Friend's a Vampire because he has this one particular friend who he hangs around all the time, who eventually is like the one guy that he confides in and stuff, and all this breaks out. And,
although if the title really made sense, the best friend should be the lead. And his best friend should be the vampire.
Right. But you've also got this other group of guys, and I don't know the guy's name, but it's the same guy who was in Waxwork, who was like the curator of the Waxwork, who's like the vampire hunter. He's like a Van Helsing character.
David Warner, I think.
Yeah. And he knows that he's been bitten by this woman because they end up killing the woman like right after he leaves her house and gets bitten. So it's him trying to get away from them after he finds out that they're looking... that he really is a vampire, and they're looking for him to...
Funny thing about this, too, is this movie has montage.
All movies in the 80s like this had a montage, I think. Yeah.
And, like, I'm not for sure, but I think the exact same song is used in Teen Wolf. My future's so bright, I gotta wear shades.
Oh, yeah, I think it is.
And this movie reminds me a lot of Teen Wolf as well, which I love Teen Wolf. I mean, that was one of those movies as a kid. I watched that movie... dozens of times. I don't think I'd ever seen this movie. I'd heard of it, but I'd never seen it. Interesting movie. I don't know if I'd call it a classic, like I was saying, but it's, if you're into the 80s comedy, teen comedy stuff, you'd probably enjoy it.
I can't help but like movies like this. I don't know. The whole damn movie looks like an after-school special. Like, the dialogue's horrible. It looks like it was filmed for an after-school special, which is, I'm sure, because of old Jimmy Houston's incompetent ass.
Hey,
but
buddy. Jimmy Houston could be listening to the show.
I don't know what it is about movies that look like that from that period of time, but I always, like, harken back to them. as being that the era that I want to watch stuff from.
I got to say, though, I think that the transfer was a huge improvement over the Slaughter High.
Yeah, it was a lot better, I have
DVD.
To admit.
I mean,
but if you get Repossessed from the Lost Collection, this is Lionsgate's Lost Collection that this film's in. If you get Repossessed or Slaughter High from that collection, they both look like shit. Like, there's no way to really defend them. They look like the VHS transfer. I think they are both the VHS transfer.
Could be.
But this one is a lot better, though.
But, yeah, I mean, there's no extras on this aside from a trivia track. It is presented in 5.1 Dolby Digital. It has subtitles for all of our deaf friends out there.
But it's, like, as far as buddy comedies of the 80s go, it's probably not up there with a lot of my favorites, you know, stuff like, hell, I don't know, like you mentioned Teen Wolf, and like, I always like stuff like Just One of the Guys and stuff like that. They're all very similar types of films. It's not up there with those, but it is amusing to watch now.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Even though I fell asleep about 4 or 5 times I was trying to watch it, but I think it had a lot to do with, you know, my hectic schedule at the mines.
I don't think it's as good as Once Bitten, though. And when's the last time you saw Once Bitten, or have
you seen it? It's been a long time.
But it's a very similar movie, I'll say that.
So, yeah, that is My Best Friend's Vampire. Vampire, fiddle of me.
So, up next, then, we've got
something completely different.
Yeah, like I said, never could two films be any more different that we review, but this is
that's what's so awesome about Deadbeat, though.
Yeah, the new one from Toe Tag Pictures and Fred Vogel, who's a good personal friend of ours. This is Murder Collection.
Volume 1. There probably will be multiple volumes of this. What I got from this movie, without going into each of the stories, I mean, we can talk about a few of the stories. There's a lot of them on this. But it's really similar to the Faces of Death.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, all of the death scenes in this are staged when, unlike the Faces of Death, which some of those were real, some of them were fake. And at first, when I first heard about this film, I thought it was more along the lines like the August Underground movies, if that's what it was going to be like. And it's really not. I mean, the graphic violence and all that isn't in this movie, really. I mean, there's some gore scenes in it, but overall, I mean, it's nowhere near the level of the, I guess, the brutalness that is the August Underground.
No, film. And it really is trying to be realistic in another kind of way, which is, it's basically a bunch of different scenes of, like, video surveillance cameras and home movies and different stuff like that of people getting murdered or deaths occurring and stuff like that. So you, in situations like that, if you've ever seen any of those, like, Faces of Death, in order for them to be realistic, they don't always show, like, the goriest shit possible. Right. In fact, very rarely do you ever see anything gory. It's just you see it is, like, how it is. And I think that's what they were going for with this, is try to be realistic. You have to, sometimes you don't see the splatter, and sometimes you don't see, you know, the intense, gruesome gore that was in the August Underground movie.
And I think that it was ingeniously edited as well, because the way it was put together, well, I mean, the whole thing with Murder Collection, I guess, is, I guess it was, they said it was in the early 90s. This is the story part of it. There was this internet show called Killing or Murders or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And the host was called Balin. I think it was in Germany or something. He wasn't speaking English, whoever the host was, and they had, like, subtitles on there. And it would be an internet show that consists of real-life murders, which I'm sure something like that probably has happened before. Nobody knew who this guy was. They shut the site down, and then, I guess, over a decade later, he resurfaced with this collection of footage, and that's what this is. So, in between a lot of the scenes, you have the Balin character, which I don't know who the hell that is in the photos. I think that's the point. You don't know who it is, and they disguise the voice. But he's speaking a foreign language, so I guess you're assuming he's in another country. and they just have subtitles of what he's saying up there, and you go from scene to scene. And a lot of the stuff that I liked was more of the home video footage that they included on there. Like the surveillance stuff, while it did make it seem like it was more realistic, it just, stuff like that just didn't entertain me, you know, and I'm sure that kind of stuff was a lot harder to shoot and choreograph and all that. I liked the stuff that actually had a little bit of a story to it, you know, which was mainly the home video stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a mixture of surveillance camera stuff, home video stuff. I think, though, that the way that Fred Vogel does this kind of stuff is just fucking ingenious. I really do. Like, even though I don't, I would never, ever sit down and watch this stuff for fun or anything. Probably will never watch any of this stuff again. I got to give the guy a lot of respect for being able, like, I don't know what cameras and stuff he used to do this.
Yeah.
But it all looked legitimate. Like, all the home video stuff looked like old shitty VHS camcorder stuff. And all the security cameras looked exactly like you'd think security cameras does. He had to choreograph a lot of this stuff because a lot of the stuff is, like, drawn out sequences with no cuts and stuff, which is incredibly hard to do and make still look realistic.
Yeah. Well, what I'm guessing, and we'll have to ask him this sometime, is he probably just goes around to pawn shops and hunts for old video cameras to use for stuff like this. And, you know, like we used to do with wrestling tapes, dub them over and over and make them like a third generation tape, make them look crappy. And I've even heard stories like Eric Stanzi, when he was doing Scrapbook, he would unspool the tape and re-spool it after he, like, crunched it all up and, you know, made it look. So, I mean, I'm sure some of that stuff happens when they make movies at Toe Tag as well. But a couple of people that were in this, I guess we should mention them as well.
Yeah, we should probably mention some of, like, the more notable scenes in it, too.
Right.
The first one that comes to mind, and I guess this was because this will actually kill two birds with one stone. This is because the guy that was in it was a really good friend. I think he still is a really good friend, even though he doesn't really post on the board that much anymore. Fiend of Gru was his board name. His real name's Jason.
Yeah.
He plays like a jealous boyfriend type or husband. I'm not sure which one it was.
Mm-hmm.
Who he's giving husband. This big monologue about how much he loved this woman. And in the background, while he's giving the monologue, you see this surveillance camera set up, and like there's a woman having sex with another guy. So he's like giving this big monologue, and you're wondering the whole time like what's going to happen, because you know something's going to happen, but you don't know what exactly. So he goes through about 10 minutes of this, telling the backstory about how they met and fell in love and all this stuff. And then he just stops, walks out of the room for about 5 minutes, and you see him come back in the other room where the videotape's coming and just hack her to death with an axe. And then he brings her heart back into the room. And that's probably the most memorable sequence in the whole film, to be honest. And it just so happens that he was in it.
Yeah, I mean, it was really good. I mean, it was one of those things where, and I'm not just saying this because we know this guy, we've met him. He's actually a fan of the show. I mean, it's one of those things where I was like, he has no experience in acting, and like he did the best job of anybody in this movie. And I'm not, I mean, that, I don't say shit like that lightly, really. But I mean, to deliver, and this is no cuts at all in this. I don't know how long this took him to do, if he actually wrote this dialogue or just practiced the hell out of it for however long. But I mean, a 10-minute long, at least 10 minutes, it was probably even longer than that, story, in addition to the facial expressions, the acting and all that stuff, he did a great job. I mean, and he should definitely do more stuff with those guys. But yeah, I mean, the story itself was really good, and I was like, wow, I mean, that's pretty fucking cool. So I liked that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Then his buddy was also in another one. We met him briefly at the Whorehound show. I think that segment was called Bullied or something like that, where these preppy guys say that they're going to have a party out in the middle of the woods, and they take the character, I think his name was Grover or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and they take him out there and say there's going to be girls there, you know, and all this shit. And then one of the preppy guys, they start fucking with him a little bit, and you can tell they're sort of just fucking around with him at first, and then, of course, they go one step too far and accidentally gut him, I guess. And I thought that was a pretty good scene as well. There's a lot of pretty decent scenes in this.
I mean, there's a lot of scenes in this movie kind of put together. There's some that like they happen so fast that you don't even really remember them. But I can remember there's a scene where like a group of guys with, you know, hoodies and masks on and stuff cut a guy's head off. And I guess his girlfriend or something's watching. They shoot her in the head and all this stuff. There's another scene at the end, the very last scene, like a group of gangsters kidnap this white girl.
I love that.
Yeah. And you can just imagine. It really seems real, too, like the way they've got it set up. They rape her and torture her and all this different stuff. In between, there's just random scenes like...
Well, there's an autopsy scene.
Yeah, right? That's another good one, too.
That's a good one to talk about, which is this... I think he was speaking Japanese, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
sounded like
definitely.
And he was performing an autopsy, and of course, it's not a real person, but that just showcases, I believe the guy's name is Jeremy Cruz, who does the makeup effects. Really fucking good job on that. I mean, stuff like that is the hardest shit to do, because, you know, a lot of people know what that looks like, and it looked pretty much real to me, you know.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different scenes in this film. Here's the thing. The only thing I'm going to say, though, I respect the film, and you would probably never know. I mean, it does just as good a job, if not a better job, than a film like Faces of Death of fooling the audience. But, like, I'm never going to watch shit like Faces of Death over and over again. Like, I question the rewatchability factor of films like this, I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean, like us, what the fuck are we going to watch over again nowadays? I mean, about anything I watch it once, and then maybe about 4 or 5 years later,
that's true. This wouldn't be something I would go back to if I was like...
Well, I was like, it's not a movie you watch with the whole family. Maybe it'd be.
It's not a movie you watch with anybody, as a matter of fact, unless you want to think you're fucking insane, but
that's true. Yeah. You don't want to, if you're trying to get somebody into horror movies, you don't start them out with anything from Toe Tag Pictures. Well, Red Centaur, maybe. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I enjoyed this movie for what it is. Like I said, I think that, The Fiend of Gru did a great job in his role. And I think it was really well put together. And
it's an excellent film for what it is. Like, you couldn't have made a better film trying to make, like, a, you know, faux documentary kind of style film like this. You couldn't do a better one than this. It's just, I don't know. It's not my thing. I'm sure it'll be a lot of people's thing, though.
Yeah. Also, you're just busy watching people stick pickle jars up their butt. That's your thing.
That's true. Like, that is the same concept. Like, I will never, ever watch that again.
I bet.
But that's one of those things you just have to see it. It's like watching people get killed. I don't know what the attraction is to that. But everybody at one time or another, well, not everybody, but quite a number of people who watch horror films has watched a film like Faces of Death or Traces of Death.
These movies, though, any of the Toe Tag movies work like, it's sort of like that car crash mentality. Where, you know, you're grossed out by it, but you still can't help yourself. You want to fucking see it at least once, you know. And that's the thing you can say about it. And we've seen all the August Underground movies. I think that Fred Vogel, he proved himself with the Red Centaur that he's not a one-trick pony. He can actually make other films, other styles of films.
Yeah, but here's one sentence you'll never hear. You'll never hear anybody go, "Hey, Grandma, get in here. We're going to watch a new Fred Vogel movie."
No. Not unless you want to kill your grandma.
Yeah.
She'll have a heart attack. Yeah. But, I mean, I think what these guys do are interesting, and it's something different. Not a lot of people can do this stuff, so check it out. It's actually available now. You can go over to toetagpictures.com and pick it up.
So I give you much respect for this movie, sir. You're very good at what you do. I will say that. So I guess...
That's it, Uncle Will. That is it for the show this week.
I'm sad as fuck now.
You know what we're going to review next week, though?
We'll
make a lot of horror fans happy because I've had this for a little while. It needs to be reviewed.
Well, I have no idea.
Laid to Rest.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We'll be reviewing that next week.
I hear a lot of things about that movie.
I hear things.
I'm not getting caught up in the hype of this shit, though. I'm not doing that again.
That's true. It's a slasher movie, though, and it's supposed to be good, so I'm looking forward to it. But until next week, and I guess you can tune into the MySpace show to find out what the fuck's planned for next week, because we have no idea. I'm Creepy Kentuckian.
I am Uncle Bill.
You've been listening to Dead Pills.
Dead Cubs.